Welcome to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. So how do you take grassroots activism and turn it into a political movement? From writing letters to government officials, letters to the editor, and protesting in the streets, is your voice being heard by those in power? We live in an age where social media allows for everyday citizens to create change. Citizen activism is a topic on today's Voice of the Public. I'm your host, Edmundo Resendez. My guests today are familiar with citizen activism. Beth Courtney is past president of the Las Cruces Tea Party, and Lucas Herndon is with Progress Now New Mexico. Two citizens on the opposite ends of the political spectrum with one thing in common, citizen activism. Call in with your questions or comments at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on our social media desk where Fred Martino is standing by ready to hear from you. We are live streaming today's show on Facebook, so log in and join in on the conversation. Here's the thing. We are not here today to debate political ideology. The goal of today's show is to learn how to go about to create change in government regardless of political dogma. What's the best way for your voice to be heard during these political times? To protest or not to protest? How do you go from protesting to getting action done in government? Should you run for political office to actually get things done? Beth Courtney, let's start with you. Give us a little bit about your background and how you first became a citizen activist.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on, Amundo. And I think mine started with just being concerned with the way the world was turning away from traditional values and the cultural things really concerned me. And so that's just my concern, my passion. I had the opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm anything but apathetic, because you can be too emotional or you don't care enough. So I've had to learn to kind of walk in the middle of the road and try to reconcile people and bring them to my way of thinking, because I think it's the right way.
When did you first hear of a topic that really caught your interest and said, wait a minute, that's something that affects me?
Well, that was with my with the gun issue, the Second Amendment, under the Clinton administration. I think was probably the first time in our history that the government actively became anti-gun. And so I became a gun person when I got married. My husband gave me a gun. I've had, as a young single woman, I had some incidents, and I really enjoyed having the right to have protection.
So the Second Amendment issue was important to you and how you first became an activist.
Yes, yes.
Lucas, let's go to you. How did you become first involved in political activism?
Well, thanks for having me on the show. I guess I got involved with about 2012, the campaign for the Oregon Mountains to become a national monument took a big shift, and the process of trying to have something done legislatively was becoming increasingly difficult in Congress, and there was this really great option to utilize the Antiquities Act, and that took a lot of work from people that knew the area, knew the history of the area, and my background in history. I became the executive director for a new group called the Friends of the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, and we really shifted the focus to talking about the cultural values within that area, and and that was really where I think I got started. Although I was reminded recently that back in college, when we invaded Iraq, there were some local protests here at the time, and I did. I went out and I waved my American flag and held some signs and got involved back then too in that regard. So, I've been doing it for a little while, but definitely more actively in the last 5-6 years.
575-646-2212. Or you can join us on our social media desk where Fred Martino is standing by ready to hear from you. Join in on the conversation. Political activism, what's a good way for you to become active? You know, there have been protests since the dawn of time. You know, let's look at American history. But in particular, I remember about the Tea Party, how that came to be back in 2010, and how organized it got from everyday citizens. What lessons did you take from that, Bev, in your activism?
Well, I was definitely agreeable with the Tea Party movement, and they mostly was taxed enough already, and they took the cue from the Boston Tea Party and how well that went for the Founding Fathers. And they're just people that are interested in keeping the good thing that we believe we have in America. We believe that smaller government is better to give the people more freedom and more authority, because it's a matter of where that authority rests. And we believe that capitalism, that the Bill of Rights that give people free, you know, certain rights, the freedom of speech, due process, all of those things, we've been seeing a usurpation of power, an abuse of power, where people were not getting due process. We've had political prisoners in America, believe it or not.
Lucas, talk to me about the latest actions that you've been involved in. You are somebody that we can't escape. I'm friends with you on Facebook, and whenever there's something going on, you're there. And you take it to a new level because you use your own personal Facebook account to promote the events that you're involved in.
Right. Well, you know, the advent of the third media, of social media, is it's an amazing tool for a lot of things. And in terms of activism and knowing what's happening, it's really changed the game, even in my lifetime, I think. So, you know, recently we've seen protests at Congressman Pierce's office that happened fairly organically. A lot of folks had shown up to try to deliver letters. They were locked out, not allowed to deliver those letters. And we started filming, and it you know, and it took off. That story got covered nationally, even by Fox News, which was pretty interesting. And then there were, after the ICE raids here locally, there was a protest that shut down Main Street for about an hour, and I went to show my support. I was not interested at that moment in time in potentially being in the road and blocking traffic, but I felt, since I was there and there wasn't at the time much press there, I pulled out my camera and started filming it and live streaming it, and that wound up being extremely useful because not only did it help get coverage, but there was actually an incident where a driver hit one of the protesters, and then we got it on camera and we were able to resolve that situation. So, you know, citizens from all walks of life have an incredibly powerful tool in their hand with a modern day smartphone to be able to live stream something, to be able to research something on the fly and find out if, you know, a news story is fake or, you know, slanted or whatever. So it's an incredibly powerful tool. And it can and has been used for bad things, but it certainly can and is used for good things as well.
Well, let's talk about some traditional first. Let's start with traditional.
Sure.
What's a good way to start? I mean, is it you become a topic interests you that affects your daily life? Do you start out by writing letters to the editor? Do you start out by, how do you go about contacting your congressman, your congresswoman, your senator, your city council? Because we're talking about here being active with regards to, you know, reaching out to everybody that is willing to hear your voice. Beverly?
I actually did start with writing letters to the editor because I was kind of slow coming into the technological age, so I'm still not that tech savvy. But yeah, I wrote letters. It's the power of the word and the power of persuasion, the power of an idea and respect for people, because the Founding Fathers said that they have given us these truths which they consider self-evident, and I don't want to get away from that, because the truth is the only thing that will fix a problem, whether it's this side or that side, and the truth is what can bring people together to fix a solution. There are no solutions based on a lie.
646-2212, 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk, where Fred Martino is standing by with your questions or comments, 575-646-2212. Lucas, let's go traditional.
Yeah.
How do you go about it?
Well, I, in college, again, I actually worked here at the Roundup at MSU for a couple years. I was the news editor for a year, and during that time, I was able to write my own editorials, sort of express my opinion about a thing. And then, you know, coming away from that and having studied history, I wrote letters to the editor from time to time. And then I think one of the things that really changed for me was seeing downtown, the downtown project as it happened in Las Cruces. And there was a little bit of back and forth. And I actually started going to city council meetings and seeing that unbelievably, you know, a lot of these things were happening in sort of a vacuum, and sure, they were being reported on in the news, but citizens, other than sort of those that had a direct vested interest, weren't going and expressing their thoughts or opinions to our elected leaders. And so that really struck a chord with me, and since then I've tried really hard to, especially when there's a topic that's super important, to actually show up to a city council meeting or a county commission meeting. And I understand that those things aren't—they're scheduled in such a way that they're hard for a lot of people to get to. But I think that, you know, recently, and I know you're talking about traditional, but we got to go back to the modern age. Recently, the city of Las Cruces made the decision to start streaming live on Facebook, beyond having their own closed caption TV or whatever they have. So that way, you know, no matter where people are, you know, if they have a minute, they can stop and tune in and see. And then all those meetings are archived, and so. That's a way for people to get involved in sort of a traditional way, is to actually go to these local meetings and be involved. And everybody gets, you know, 2 minutes or 7 minutes to speak and speak their mind. And there are folks that do. They go every week and they say something about local issues or even federal issues sometimes. But
Bev, let's talk about your background. You are, you know, you're not an activist per se. You have a job.
Yes.
You have a family. What motivates you? What inspires you to get out there and get your voice heard?
Well, I homeschooled my kids, so that took up many years, and I'm pretty proud of them. They're going to college. I'm going to have 2 doctors out of 3 that I homeschooled, so that's cool.
That's a good track record.
But I want them to have that future, to be able to have the opportunity that presents, because they worked hard to get through. I mean, one of them has a double E degree. One of them has a master's degree in social health, but with a year in chemistry that my daughter aced. Well, if they don't have the freedom to pursue their goals in life, that all that work that they've done to excel, to be a service to our communities, they're not going to be interested in doing it. If it doesn't have rewards. So let's go to capitalism. I like that. I was raised in a very poor family. I can remember going to the, they didn't have welfare. We didn't do welfare. But we had food commodities, if anybody remembers those days. And we would go get some basic food supplies. But, you know, my mom worked. She believed in hard work. She taught it to us, the work ethic. And nobody had to stay where you needed to go get food from the government. You know, we thought that was a shameful thing. We didn't want to be there. So it was a different mindset that I'm hoping I can bridge the gap between the older generation and the younger generation, because the Tea Party is a bunch of people that have worked hard and want to keep what they worked for. They want their kids to inherit it. They want their kids to do better than they did, you know?
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to Fred Martino, who is standing by the social media desk. Fred, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Thank you very much, Edmundo. And we have a question for both of your guests. They may have different answers on this, but I think it's a really important question. How should activists turn a protest movement into a political movement that can drive change?
Lucas, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, we've seen it work in the past. You know, some of the big names, Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., they took they took their physical bodies and occupied a space, and around that space spoke about the ideas that they had and they felt were important to their cause. And it got to a point where people outside of their direct sphere of influence were hearing that message and seeing that message literally physically take shape, and were forced to listen and forced to hear it and forced to see it. And so I think that's one of the things that, that happens often. And can, you know, so locally, you know, we saw people do the same thing here, where they use their bodies to physically block traffic in response to, you know, terrifying and potentially unconstitutional raids by federal police forces in our community. And in response to that, and part of their demands at the time was to hear from local officials and local law enforcement to have some kind of assurances that local law enforcement would not be a party to these federal raids. And as a result, both the Las Cruces Police Department and the county sheriff's department have issued statements, you know, assuaging those fears, saying that they are not, in fact, you know, working at the behest of the federal government on these raids. And so again, that right there is a show of force by nonviolent, you know, activists here in the community that had a particular cause, put their bodies on the line, and then were heard and were seen and had a result from that.
Okay, that's very interesting. So a good example of that, you know, on our Facebook page, Anna had an answer to this that was all-encompassing. She says, in the way that activists can turn a protest movement into a political movement is to show up at town hall meetings, to call your legislators, to be informed, and most important of all, to vote. Bev, what is your thought about this, about how activism and protest can actually become a political movement? The Tea Party certainly proved that this was possible, and the Tea Party is still having a big effect on national politics.
Well, maybe the Tea Party is an older generation, and we don't want to just protest and turn, I mean, because I actually don't know what they were protesting. So the issue, you have to start with the issue to me, and you have to educate and inspire. And maybe that's not really putting you out on the streets. Let's go back to the written word. You can blog. You can research history. You can show what actions have consequences, because that happens. And people can think for themselves if they know what they are doing is going to end up either a good or a bad result. And so I'm very results-oriented, and I can show them this goes this way or this goes that way, and to help them think about if it's worth it. And we want politics based on truth. We want politics that are going to give people the freedom that we've enjoyed. Honestly, I count my blessings for living in America, because there's nothing that has kept me from being poor. I've had free education. There's all kinds of different entities that offer free education. If you want to do that or read, you can read. We don't burn books yet. So, hey, if you can go read, there's nothing that limits your thinking and limits the policy's abilities in America. What better thing is there that they can get?
Yeah, some different examples there. So maybe this would be a good question for Bev, and also for Lucas. Susan asks on Facebook, what have you found to be the most effective way of getting people involved, to move them beyond what she calls keyboard activism?
Keyboard activism.
Well, I'll jump in real quick and say that this is actually something I think I agree with Bev on, is that educating folks about why an issue is important to them is, I think, what I have seen to be the most effective way to affect change. When you stand up on a street corner with a sign and say whatever message you're trying to espouse, and someone drives by, if they don't know what you're sign means, then, you know, you're not affecting that person. So, you know, one of the things that I do with Progress Now on a fairly regular basis is create, you know, narrative campaigns where we break down an issue that seems complicated or seems like it only affects maybe a small population, and try to just create a system wherein people are educated about why this really matters to everybody. You know, why does locally, why does a county change to the way they do their coding for property? Why does that matter to, you know, everybody in a community? Well, if, you know, it's a complicated, it's a huge document, but it is complicated. So creating, you know, going through that and distilling it down and finding examples of how people can, you know, so that people can understand it is absolutely important. So education really is a key factor so that other people will then speak up about that issue.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or join us on Facebook and our social media desk, where Fred Martino is standing by, ready to hear from you with your questions or comments. Today, we are discussing citizen activism. What is the best way to have your voice heard during these political times? To protest or not to protest? How do you go from protesting to getting action done in government? Key question, Bev, should one get tired of things and run for office? You've done it. What was that experience like?
Absolutely. Well, it was educational. It was exciting. It was a great adventure. And even though I lost, I had no regrets. I had no regrets. It was I learned so much, and so.
What office did you run for?
I ran for City Council, District 3. So that was 4 years ago. And
how did you go about doing that? You know, what's the process like? Do you have to fill out forms? Do you have to go out on the street, hit the street, hit pavement?
Well, the beautiful thing about our republic in form of government is I just went to the city office and they gave me a packet with all the information and it didn't even cost a thing.
So what was your first step?
I went there and they gave me the packet because they have a deadline of when you can file to run for office. And once you got the packet, you have to meet certain deadlines. First of all, you have to go out and get enough people to sign your petition to say, yeah, we want you to go run for office. We're willing for you to do that.
Okay, so first step, petition signing.
Yes.
What's the second step?
Well, you have to get the word out who you are. So that takes money. So you have to raise some money and figure out how to get the word out. And it was a matter of looking at everything. Well, there's media, you know, radio, if somebody invited you or not. Mm-hmm. And advertising is expensive.
And yard signs.
Those signs are fairly expensive.
Those are fairly expensive. They run the gamut. I mean, I once saw a yard sign go for $10, a yard sign. And, you know, when you get into running for office and you've got to get these yard signs out, it can get pricey.
It helps to get people to volunteer, so to be able to get a team together, you know, that believe that what you want to go run on that represents them, you know, because I look at it as America as a public servants, you know, not...
How many people did you have on your team?
Well, I had the gun club.
You had the gun club?
And I had my kids and their friends. And so, and I actually didn't have a lot of time to organize because I had to go to court over my petition, my ballot petitions, and they didn't change those rules. So, you know, I'm going to challenge those rules again because I don't think they're right. I think that it puts...
What in particular is not right about the rules?
About the ballot petitions and the criteria it meets, because there is this little mistake that average voter didn't understand, which is because to go vote, they could still vote, but they couldn't sign the ballot petition. And we all didn't understand that. And the reason I took issue with it is because I worked the polls for years and years and years while my kids were growing up. And I knew everybody in my neighborhood. And I thought, well, why is their signature not good enough? Because I saw them at the voting booth year after year after year, you know, in my house that I lived in for 20 plus years. And so I knew my neighbors. I knew who they were. I knew they could vote. So how come they couldn't sponsor me as a candidate. And it was because, like, they had moved around the corner. They were all still in District 3, which I knew that. It was small print.
Lucas, are there trainings to encourage people to run for office?
There are, and there are. You're seeing more and more. There's a really great program here in New Mexico, specifically for women, called Emerge, and they invite women up north, and go through the gambit of running a campaign and what the different roles are for a campaign manager and a treasurer and, you know, press people or whatever. And then we've seen also some of those groups come down, and I participated in a training right after, I guess it was the 2015 elections locally. We had a multi-week class where we actually had some guests from Albuquerque that have run professional campaigns, and they came down and broke it all down for us every week, a little something different, and talked about, again, those different roles that a campaign takes. I'd like to answer the question about whether people should get involved and run for office, and I just, because it's pretty relevant. Last Saturday I was elected within.
That's right. You just ran.
Yeah.
You just ran. Okay. Talk to me about what you ran for.
Sure.
And what that was about.
Sure. So within the Democratic Party, there's sort of all these levels, right? So that, you know, there's the National Democratic Party, and then there's the state party, and then it goes down even further to where there's the county party. And within the county, there's a county chairperson and a county vice chair, and then all the different districts, which are designated by our state representative districts, have a director, and they're elected by yet another layer, the precinct chairs. And so the precinct chairs were elected a few weeks ago. A precinct is a small block of people. It's generally about a few physical blocks within the city. And then so we all elected our precinct chairs, and then from within that pool of electors, we were able to run for a district director position. So I was elected from my district, District 33, by my fellow precinct chairs, and so now my responsibility is to sit on the executive council, or, you know, executive committee of the Democratic Party of Doñana County, and my job is to represent the Democrats of that district, District 33.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation regarding citizen activism. Do you want to become politically active? What's the best way to go about it? To protest or not to protest? That takes a lot of time and effort to go do that. But in this day and age where you've got access to social media, you can have protests via social media. What other ways do you go about protesting? Do you boycott? Divestment. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go to a caller on the line. Michelle, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Lucas. This is Michelle Granger, and hi, Bev. I know both of you.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. How are you? It's so exciting to hear both of you on the radio, such different opinions. You know, I guess mine is more state politics-minded, my question. You know, New Mexico has went from 46th poorest state in the nation to the 50th poorest, and I feel like that's a large result of the failed economic and largely Republican policies of Susana Martinez. So I guess, you know, things like no new taxes, completely solvent a budget to where we can't spend more than we bring in, but we're not allowed to bring anything in. Also, you know, relying on big oil and gas, which I feel like typically is a very Republican right-wing, you know, strategy. How, Bev, do you sort of figure out that we can get ourselves out of this mess, and how do you reconcile your association with right-wing policies as far as New Mexico goes? I feel like they've been pretty bad for New Mexico. And then second part of that question, I guess, would be, Lucas, where do you think we can go from here as far as getting ourselves out of this horrible predicament that we're in right now as a state?
Thank you, Michelle. Bev?
Well, I'm not sure that being at the bottom of the list is one governor's, one person's fault. The state of New Mexico has been ruled by the Democrats, they say, practically for the last 80 years, except for one Republican House of Representatives, the last, which we had lost again to the Democrats this last election here recently, last November, actually. Capitalism is still the world's best way to get people out of poverty. And the reason they were relying on the Republican oil and gas industry over there is because they have the money and they are paying the lion's share. And I don't know why you would want to go against, you know, bite the hand that feeds you kind of thing. But the government doesn't bring people into prosperity. Large government, capitalism, bringing business, giving people opportunity to practice free enterprise, making it easy for us to get jobs, to start our own businesses. That's what lifts people out of poverty.
Okay, we can get into political ideology very easy.
We could go down
that road and probably generate a lot of phone calls. But
which is why we're both activists.
Yeah, but you know, again, what role does a citizen have in talking about poverty to politicians?
Sure.
Talking about poverty to elected officials who can make that change, all right? So, Lucas, how do you go about talking to the governor about why did we fall from 46th to 50th?
Right. Well, in the spirit of not going down that debate rabbit hole, I'm not sure I have any answers about how to speak to the governor. She was here recently. She was here the other day, and without making a partisan remark, just objectively, she was very closed-mouthed about responding to questions about the budget from the press. So, the answer to your question is I literally don't know, because she won't talk to anybody about it. She keeps talking about closed, you know, she's making plans behind closed doors, and they're going to come back and they're going to have it all figured out. So I don't know. I don't know how you do that. But what I will say is that the keeping the pressure on between now and November 18th, if people want change, as Michelle alluded to, from a Republican governor, then that means that they have to go out and vote, and theoretically for a member of the opposite party. And I think that the movement that brought in Republicans in 2014 to the state house,
because that was a movement.
It was a movement.
Would you agree, Bev? Because yes, again, Doña Ana County went from a very strong Democrat area to suddenly switching to bringing in the Republicans. And I remember being there on election night at Republican Party headquarters and the elation that came from that.
Well, you know, to get that kind of just a political victory takes organization. And the Republican Party suffers a lot of opposition. So, you know, when you have a larger percentage of the population against it, it's kind of hard to get going. But I am totally committed to what I believe, so I can take a loss and keep going because I believe I'm pursuing the truth. And about working with the governor for the last 8 years, and we went from 46, which was low, to even lower, well, they've had gridlock because here's the problem. We have to look at each other with respect. We have to reconcile the other side to why we believe what we believe is right. Instead of taking this oppositional, confrontational, you could call it tribal, this tribe against that tribe, and look at the issues and find out what's good for the American people. And what does the American people really want? And who are the ones that, like the people that are native to this community are probably the ones in poverty, not the people that moved here retired. So you've got two demographics. One is, over here on the far spectrum of poverty, and the other one's enjoying retirement and being very wealthy in a community that used to not cost so much, but that seems to be changing. It's costing more and more to live here because of taxes.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on our social media desk where Fred Martino is standing by. Fred, social media, calls coming in. What's happening there.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Edmundo. And we do have a question from Connie on Facebook. Connie asks, how can we counter outside influences and money from coming into our local elections? Lucas, why don't we start with you on that, since we just heard from Bev. Certainly citizen activism is part of this, but you know, this question really gets to something very interesting when you think about it, because we have a lot of national activism, and national activism finds its way into the local political scene. And Connie wants to know, you know, how can we prevent that? Some might argue we shouldn't prevent it, but what do you think, Lucas?
Well, that's it's a great question. I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, there's going to have to be legal precedent change because of Citizens United. And that's certainly something that has been at work now for a couple of years at the top level. People have been working for that change. But I think, on the other hand, you can counter it with a really good, strong grassroots campaign. You know, recently, when we had our last local election, we reelected the mayor, reelected a couple, one city councilor, and then elected two new city councilors. That campaign at the local level was incredibly lopsided in terms of outside spending. You saw PAC money come from Representative Steve Pierce's PAC, Goal West, and the governor's PAC, Susanna PAC, and in support of their candidates on the right. And to the tune, at least in the mayor's race, of almost $100,000 in ads for their candidate and also against Mayor Miyagashima. On the other hand, though, we had really great local activism. We had folks on the ground knocking on doors, sending mailers, having, you know, meetings and town halls and debates and, you know, all that, not to mention on, you know, their social media and that kind of thing. So I think what we saw was that, you know, they spent the money and they tried to put out a narrative. And what it was that the supporters of that candidate, they were more active. They got the vote out. And the mayor won re-election, and as did some of the other progressive candidates. So I think that would be my answer. Is I don't think there's a way to stop it until we change the law. But there is a way to counter it by staying active and working real hard on those grassroots campaigns.
All right. How about you, Bev? Connie asks, how can we counter outside influences and money coming into our local elections?
Well, I think, to be clear, that both sides actually do that. So it's not limited to one party or the other. And people speak with their money. You could call it a First Amendment issue, because people that don't have a voice, if you run for office, you're going to find out it's kind of hard to get your message out there. So on the other hand, there probably should be some rules. I don't think we should have any foreign money by any stretch. Money does cross state to state. I don't know how I feel about that. People cross state to state. So I would have to look at it. I wouldn't say I would shut it off with not having a broad knowledge of it. So that's, you know.
Let me ask you this, Bev, and I'd like Lucas to respond to this as well. You know, Lucas, in his answer, mentioned that he feels that Citizens United was a real problem, that needs to be overturned. It has unleashed more money into our political system. And you, in your answer, you're saying, look, money is a way to be able to spread your message. That's what you're saying, Bev. And you're questioning, you know, maybe we shouldn't restrict that. But let me ask you this: there have been, including in New Mexico, not only efforts to allow the power of money to be used in political speech. There have been efforts to say, we are not going to have transparency on this either. We're going to go ahead, and if someone proposes a law to require disclosure of where this money is coming from, we're going to fight that disclosure, because we don't want people who are spending the money to be exposed. What do you think of this, Bev? I want your answer on this, and then also Lucas.
I'm for transparency in everything. everything. So if they want to give money and say that their voice is heard, then you need to put your name behind it. The reason for that is because of an individual citizen, say the people that are here in New Mexico that earn minimum wage, they're working one head of household or whatever, and they don't have money to put into the political voice, then you would have some corporation come in and they can put even millions of dollars into it. Then that pretty much would close off the voice of the small person, which is not good for the republic. So there has to be transparency and maybe some limits on buying power, like with the lobbyist, that, you know, just common sense and looking for things that work and that gives everybody the voice, which if we stick to the republic, that's what we're supposed to have. Everybody's supposed to have a voice.
Lucas?
I think that that's, I think the transparency issue is extremely important for sure. And that's certainly what, that's probably the major issue with Citizens United beyond the, I mean, really the decision is that the PACs are unlimited. And so, and full transparency, you know, I work for a company or for a PAC that has worked in, you know, in Las Cruces. And what I'm proud of, though, is that our PAC is fully transparent. We name all of our donors. And so in that election that I was alluding to earlier, you know, we raised about $3,000 for our PAC and for our candidates. But that was all raised locally in New Mexico. And so, I'm proud of that. So I guess I agree with Bev on the sense that the transparency issue is extremely important. It should be that way for all folks. There are laws on the books that require the politicians themselves to show where all their funding comes from. The issue is that when on those sheets it says, you know, $25,000 from whatever PAC, and then you don't know what that money was made up of. So I think that is a big part of it, is creating a culture wherein, you know, you stand up behind your money and say what you're supporting.
And so it just the last legislative session, I think the right demonizes Soros and the left demonizes the Koch brothers. And so, but seriously, they introduced some anti-gun laws up in Santa Fe this legislative session, and the money trail definitely went back to Soros. So I just take it as a fact of life. And we all went out there.
It's definitely evolved since Citizens United. And, you know, people these days, you know, again, my shock 4 years ago or however long ago it was during the last local election, seeing PAC money coming into local politics. It was really surprising to me. While I had expected it to happen, but to see it happen in such a way where there was a lot of money being spent on radio, print, and direct mail, it was really extraordinary. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 to join in on the conversation on citizen activism. We also have time for social media where you can ask Fred Martino your questions or comments on Facebook and Twitter, 575-646-2212. Let us go to Bob, who has been patiently standing by. Bob, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. Bev knows me from her organizations, but I'm a scientist.
Good to hear you.
and I'm not all that convinced that activism is the right way. My particular issue is this notion of human-caused CO2 fuel, global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it. And there, in my observation, there are absolutely no data to show this is true. So what I try to do is write letters to the editor. The Sun News sometimes publishes my letters. They refuse to publish my columns anymore. And so I've taken to different ways. One is speaking before civic groups, and Bev has a couple of those. And I want to thank Fred Martino for posting a couple of blog posts on KRWG.org on the KRWG blog for putting a couple of my blog posts up. So my thought is that a way of communicating this better would be to have an open forum, since numbers don't transfer very well to radio. Maybe a debate or something in the either the Plaza Theater or the Convention Center or something like that, where we could have people on the left who are the alarmists and some of those more rational people compare and contrast so that the public could see it in a forum where you can present the numbers in a way sort of like a college colloquium. That's the point where I'm coming from.
Thanks, Bob. I mean, are there opportunities? I mean, are we at a point in this society where we're too divided that we can't come together and have a public forum, a public conversation on the issues? I mean, you know, you've got every side to the argument. Can we come together?
I think that it might depend on the issue and the level of severity to some degree, right? So I think that on issues that affect us locally, like the transportation issue or the UDC code or things of that nature, I see those back and forth movements happen where, you know, city councilors or county commissioners, you know, they do make changes. They make that amendment. They go back to the drawing board. They make, you know, on the local UDC argument recently, it was resolved in December, but in that process, at one point, a neighborhood association had some very, very legitimate concerns about how the UDC was going to affect their particular neighborhood. And so they worked with the county commission to get specific language to help affect their neighborhood so that it wouldn't, you know, have those negative impacts. And so I think that that's where you see that citizen engagement and how you can come together. You can make those changes. And because I know folks in that neighborhood, you know, from both sides of the aisle that were concerned about that issue. And so I think that's really what it comes down to is, and I alluded to this earlier, that when you can create the educational aspect of it and create the right kind of narrative that allows people to understand how an issue does affect them, even if they didn't think previously it did, you really can come together and find a lot of support.
Let's talk about civil disobedience. There's a lot of sides to this argument on whether or not civil disobedience is the correct way of doing this. Lucas, you know, looking at blocking of streets, you know, when you know, people, everyday citizens, and it's just not allowed, but when it's done, what purpose does it serve to block streets from people that are just going about their daily lives?
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to power, and it comes down to what kind of power do you have? And for folks that get to that place, they have experienced or are experiencing a lack of power and a feeling of powerlessness. And so when folks were feeling for our immigrant neighbors here locally and seeing violence acted upon them, they were at a place of loss. They didn't know what to do. And they had been, I mean, these groups had been working on these issues for a long time, and they had asked to be heard and had asked to be seen by the powers that be for a long time and continue to ask that. And so they were just at a place where the feeling of powerlessness was overwhelming. And so going out and blocking the streets again, and I said this earlier, is that it they used their bodies to create that power. And they did, because they created a situation where they shut down traffic for an hour, and, you know, the police came out. And I want to say that the Las Cruces Police Department really, really were great during that whole interaction. I want to say that out loud. And they utilized that space to be heard, to be seen. And, yeah, it made people mad.
That's what I was about to say, Lucas. Edmundo, I think that backfires on people. And some of those poor kids got run over up in somewhere, Las Vegas or somewhere. And the thing is that, you know, the people that are driving to and from work, and they have appointments to keep and so much work to get done in a day, they don't have time to be out there on the street.
Okay, so let's go one last time.
That's disrespectful. It's disrespectful.
Let's go to our social media page, social media desk real quick and wrap up the conversation because we're running out of time. Fred?
Thank you very much, Edmundo. Mick on Facebook has a question, and maybe we can get in a quick answer from both Lucas and Bev. Mick says, activism is costly, taking time off work, possible legal issues, fear of losing your job. How would you suggest minority populations and low-income households participate in activism? Lucas, let's start with you.
Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think that the quick answer in the time we have left is that you have to take all your decisions into heart and make those decisions for yourself. On the other hand, when people are in desperate times, desperate measures, that's oftentimes when you see them take action. So that is another part of like privilege, right? Of being in a place where those of us that can go out must speak for the voiceless. That's our charge. That's our duty as human beings to look after one another. And so for the folks that can take that time and come to these events or go to the city council meetings or go to the county commissions, you can't just go and speak for yourself. You have to go and speak for your neighbor, for your kids, for the voiceless people in your life.
Bev, how do you go about it? I mean, you've got multiple jobs.
Yeah, I do. I have to work. And I personally think it's relationship. And I want to say this about the public forums, about reaching out to people. The city, because they are all on the left side or they're all Democrats, they squeezed out the voice of us. They did not let the Tea Party have a forum there. When I was running for candidate, they won't let you use the parks because you have to have a fee. And bureaucrats can just close the doors to everything. So you need representation from both sides of the fence so that doesn't happen, because they take their ideas and they definitely lack respect. So you need to give, as a city, you have to represent all people. As a county, as an elected official, as a candidate, you're representing all people, not just the ones that are holding your different political or religious ideology. And then you need to come and convince them through reasonableness, for teaching them education, for teaching them the truth, and showing respect for them. Because you only go make people mad. Even younger people that have jobs don't like to be kept from getting where they're supposed to be and having to explain to the boss why they're 10 minutes late. So people that work understand that.
Beth Courtney, former president of the Las Cruces Tea Party, and Lucas Herndon with Progress Now New Mexico. Thank you very much for being part of the conversation today on political activism. To wrap things up, what's your next move? What are you protesting at? What are you doing next? And
well, I'd like to, I'm going to go ahead and plug that there's a public town hall meeting with our two senators, Senator Udall, Senator Heinrich, on Monday night at the convention center, I believe.
Las Cruces Convention Center?
Yeah, and so that'd be a good way for people to come out and be involved. There's also an election on May 2nd for the Doñana Soil and Water Conservation District. There are two positions open, and I would encourage people to go vote in that election.
Bev?
Yeah, I want people to come out to that soil and water conservation election, too, and vote for people that will just do the job and that don't have a political ideology. And You know, I'm going to keep doing the American Gun Culture Club, and if my husband gives me his blessing, I'm going to run for city council again.
All right. Bev, Lucas, thank you very much for being part
thank
of
you.
Today.
Yeah, thanks, Edmundo.
Thank you for having us.
Fred Martino is director of content at KRWG and worked the social media desk. Jacob Lockwood handled the phones. Mark Johnson handled production. If you have suggestions for future shows, email us at feedback@nmsu.edu. I'm your host and producer, Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us today on Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org.